just do a couple of things on, finish the things up on determinants. So let me just give you a nice simple application of determinants. So for example, if I wrote this determinant, let's take this determinant, and let me make the first row, let's call it x, y, z, and 1. And then so I'm going to make a determinant, I have to provide three other rows. So let me put three rows of numbers. Let me call A1, B1, C1, 1, A2, B2, C2, 1, A3, B3, C3, 1, equal to 0. Now, if you expand along the first row, you'll get x times something plus y times something plus z times something plus a constant equals 0. So what is this basically going to give you when you expand the determinant? This is the equation of what? Just expand it along the first row. You're going to get x times a number, which is the minor. Okay. Take x times that determinant, b1. Okay. And what plus y times a constant, z times a constant, plus a constant equals 0. What is that the equation of? That's a plane. So I claim. Now, so this is going to be the equation of the plane. Of the plane. Passing through the points. Well, what points? Well, you see, if I put x, if I look at the point, if I set x equals a1, y equals b1, z equals c1, what do you see about that determinant? If I just replace x, y, and z by those values, a1, b1, c1, what will happen? Because you're going to get a determinant with two equal rows, so it's 0. So in other words, this plane passes through the point A1, B1, C1. Similarly, it passes through the point A2, B2, C2, and therefore it passes through the point A3, B3, C3. Okay, passes the points A1, B1, C1, A2, B2, C2, A3, B3, C3. Now, it'll be a plane providing the coefficients of x, y, and z are not 0. We'll see in a minute. We want these points to be non-collinear if these points are not collinear. Now you'll see how that comes in. Let's give another expansion. So here, if I take this determinant, I can simplify it in the following way. Let me subtract from the other rows the fourth row. You see why I want to do that. For one thing, I'd like to expand along the third column. So I can make all the entries above the last one zero by subtracting the last row from each of the preceding rows. That won't change the determinant. So this is the same thing as having x minus a3, y minus b3, z minus, z minus c3, 0, and then I'll have A1 minus A3, B1 minus B3, C1 minus C3, 0, and then A2 minus A3, B2 minus B3, C2 minus C3, and that's 0. And then I'll have the last row, A3, B3, C3, and 1. So I haven't changed the determinant. All I've done is subtract from the preceding rows, the last row from the preceding rows. Now I will expand along the last column. So I'll expand along the last column. Oops. So I'll expand along the last column. If I do that, you see that there's a row in this particular case that will be also. So there's really what the answer here is going to be is a determinant. There's only one determinant because if I expand the Laplace expansion form along the last column, I have three zeros, so that's not going to contribute anything. And then the last one is going to be a 1, that's minus 1, so you have 1 times a determinant, and the determinant is going to be x minus a3, y minus b3 and z minus c3. So you should be recognizing very quickly what's going on, minus b3, c2 minus c3, and then a2 minus a3, b, I'm sorry, there was a mistake there. This is b1. B1 and C1 minus C3. And then A2, B2 minus B3, C2 minus C3. Now, if you should recognize this, now this is the equation of the plane. The last two rows, what are those? Those last two rows are what? They're differences in the coordinates of the point. So they're the directions of A, well, the difference is in that if you have three points, you take your points at A3, and then you subtract from the other two points the coordinates of A3. So you get the vectors of the side of a triangle. Okay, and what am I doing here? In this determinant, when I expand now along the first row, what am I going to get? I'm going to get x minus A3 times something, and that something is going to be y minus B3 times something, and z minus C3 times something, and those things are just going to be the vector product of those row of the last two rows. So if you like, you can just write this. This is equal to, this is basically the vector x minus A3. I'll write it in terms of rows instead of columns, but it doesn't matter. X minus A3, y minus B3, z minus C3, dot with, well, I should give these a name. Let me call this, say, A1, and let me call this A2, and let me call this A3. In that case, this is going to be the vector A1, A3, vector product A2, A3. So you see visibly that this is the equation of the plane, and the normal is the vector product. And that vector product of the two of those two vectors obtained by taking the difference in the coordinates of the points, that those the components that are minors of the first row, they're the minors, they're the normal. So the component of x minus a3 will be a determinant, which will be the component of the x component of the vector product. Okay, so this is, you can see that. You also get from here a condition, when are three points collinear? When are four points coplanar? If you put in the condition, would be this: that if you had a fourth point here, then those four points would be coplanar, if and only if this when you replace those points in here, you get zero. In other words, anyway. So here's a nice condition for four points being coplanar, is that so for example. Okay, leave that go. So that's a nice example. It's nothing new, but it's just a very quick way of writing down the equation of the plane in vector form. There it is. It's a neat way of doing it very quickly. Of course, when you have to compute it, that problem with determinants are easy to write down, but you actually have to do some computation. And I did the computation here to reduce it to. So either way you want to compute the plane, you can do it this way, or you can do it using determinants. Both get you to the same place. Okay. One other thing, I would be amiss if I didn't tell you what the van der Monde determinant was. So you wouldn't be an educated person unless you knew what this was, the van der Monde determinant. Now, it's nice, not very often that you have a formula for a determinant, but there's a few that are we do have, and they're quite important. We'll actually use this just shortly. So let me take I'll write a determinant here. I'm just going to put ones, and then I'm going to put x1, x2, x3, and then I'm going to put x1 squared, x2 squared, x3 squared, and then you just keep going. Here you're going to have n minus 1, or x n minus 1. X1. I'm going to be making an n by n determinant here. X1 to the n minus 1, x2 to the n minus 1. That's the last column. x n to the n minus 1. This is what we call the van der Monde determinant. So 1's along the first column, and then in the second column you just put any numbers you like, x1, x2, x3, x. Then the second column you put the squares of those, the third is the cubes. And then in the last column, you put the nth power. N minus 1 because I want an n by n determinant. So this is what, by n points? Xn. Yes. The last one is xn. So I have n points, x1, x2, up to xn. And then there's squares. Then there's squares, and then and so on. Now, there's a very simple answer for this, and let me... And what this is this is how to actually compute it. You basically, you take xn minus xn minus 1, xn minus xn minus 2, all the way down to xn minus x1, and then you do the repeat the same, xn minus 1 minus xn minus 2, all the way down, xn minus 1 minus x, x1. Basically, you're taking all the products, and then the last one will be x2 minus x1. So in other words, what you do, you take xn and subtract from that xn minus 1, and then xn minus xn minus 2. And then the next one, you start with xn minus 1. Basically, all the differences of the xi minus xj's. Okay, this is in this order. Okay, so that's what it is. Let me just prove that. Now, this is here, so this is not equal to zero. From here, you can see this is not equal to zero if and only if the xi are all distinct. X1, xn are all distinct. You can't have any two equal. Because if you have two equal, then you have an equal row. So this is precise. So here's a nice invertible matrix. Any numbers x1 through xn you can put in, and you produce an invertible matrix. In fact, you have the formula for its determinant. Okay. Let me just show you how to actually do this, the computation. Let's just give an example of the computation. For n equals 3, there are many ways of doing it, but there's one way that is particularly helpful, and it's the following. I'm going to do it for n equals to 4, and we'll just compute it. So we'll take 1, 1, 1, 1, x1, x2, x3, x4, x1 squared, x2 squared, x3 squared, x4 squared, and then x1 cubed, x2 cubed, x3 cubed, x4 cubed. Okay. Now what I'm going to do, it's a natural thing to do, is to do put zeros in the first row, and in the first column, by the trick we did before, and expand along that. Unfortunately, that doesn't give a good result. Basically, what I want to do is I'm going to show you how to reduce the calculation of a 4 by 4 van der Monde to a 3 by 3 van der Monde. Then you can keep going. So if you don't do it this way, then... Now, the trick here, and it's one you won't, is the following. What I'm going to do is I'm going to take the next to the last column. So what I'm going to do, I'm going to make the entries in the first row 0, except the first. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to subtract from the last column x1 times from the fourth column, x1 times the third. That's going to make zero in the last. So what I'm going to have, so let me write down that last column. I'm going to have zero. And then I should give myself enough room here. We're going to have some differences here. So here I'm going to write the last column. I'm going to have x1 cubed minus x1 cubed. So that's zero. So I'm going to have zero there. So I'm going to have zero. And then the next one, I'm going to have x2 cubed minus x1 x2 squared. And then I'm going to have x3 cubed, minus x1 x3 squared. And the last one, I'm going to have x4 cubed minus x, x1 times x4 squared. Okay. So that's what you get in the last column. If I subtracted x1 times the third column from the fourth, right? Because I get 0, and then I get x2 cubed minus x1, x2 squared, and then x3 cubed minus x1, x3 squared, and then x4 cubed minus x1, x4 squared. Everybody see that? I'm taking
I'm taking this column, multiplying by x1, and subtracting from that.
Okay, that's good. Okay, now I'm not going to write down the other columns. Now you can see what's happening here. There's a common factor of x2 minus x1. Okay, I don't have a common factor yet. Okay, so I'm going to do the same thing. I could write down the other three rows, but I won't. Let me now take what I have there. I'm now going to multiply the second column by x1 and subtract it from the third. Okay, so if I do that, I'm going to get a zero, and then I'm going to have x2 squared minus x1 x2, x3 squared minus x1 x3, and I'm going to have x4 squared minus x1 x4. Okay, and then I'm going to subtract x1 times the first from the second, so I'm going to get a zero, x2 minus x1, x3 minus x1, and then x4 minus x1, and I'll have 1, 1, 1, 1. So here what I've done is I subtracted x1. Now I didn't watch the order. I start with the last column, multiply that by x1 and subtract that, the next to last, the third column, multiply that by x1 and subtract that from the fourth. I get that column. Now I could write down the other, just to save time, I'm not going to write down the rows that are the other columns. So let's just do it again now. I'll take now the second column, multiply that by x1 and subtract from the third. Okay, and then I get this. Now I'll take, once I've written that down, I have the first two columns are there, and those are the last two. And I'm going to take x1 times the first column and subtract it from the second. And I get that. Now I'm going to now expand along the first row. Use the Laplace expansion formula along the first row. Okay, so then this is crossed out. And now you'll notice you should see what the answer is going, well, you're going to see, well, I'm running out of space here. Well, let me call this Vandermonde to something here. Let's call this Vn. This is the Vandermonde of order n, Vandermonde determinant of order n. Now, you see what's going to happen here is look in the first row. If you look in the first row of the expanded determinant, that's what's left there because expanding along the first column. What do I have in the first row? I have x2 minus x1, and then I can factor out an x2, and I'll get an x2 into x2 minus x1, and in the third row, in the third column, I'll have an x2 into x2 minus x1. So I have an x2 minus x1 as a common factor of the first row. And if you look carefully, you'll have an x3 minus x1 factor of the second row, and in the last row, you're going to have a factor x4 minus x1 as a common factor there. Okay. So I can take out now. I can take out, since that factor multiplies the whole row, I can take it all out. So I can take out x4. X2 minus X. I'll go from the bottom. X4 minus X1. I'll take out the factor X4 minus X1. And the next factor is going to be X3 minus X1. And then the last factor is going to be X2 minus X1. And then what's going to be left? Well, what's going to be left? Well, I don't have much space. I don't want to turn it. What's going to be left in the first column? You're going to have 1, 1, 1. The next column you're going to have, you're taking out a x2, x3, x4. Okay, and then the last column here you're going to have x2 squared, x3 squared, x4 squared. So basically, actually, it's not quite the Vandermonde, but it's a Vandermonde for, basically I should call this as Vandermonde for x1, x2, xn. So let me rewrite this. Let me make the dependence of the variables here in the Vandermonde a little more clear. So this is really, let me write it here. This we'll call, this is going to be Vn but x1, x2, xn. So the variables x1, x2, xn are going to be the entries in that second column. Okay, now here I'm going to get a Vandermonde of size what? 3, 3 by 3 Vandermonde. But what are the variables? They're going to be x2, x3, x4. Okay. So if you do it again, now you do the same rule. if you want to go to V2, you're going to factor out an x from here. Remember, with the role of the x1, you're going to get an x4 minus x3, x4 minus x2, times the van der Monde of which is 2 by 2. And so you can see how you're getting out all the factors. So this is the quick way. Actually, there's a much quicker way. If you look in the van der Monde, if you think of this as a polynomial in these n variables, if you put if x1 equals x2, it gets 0 because the two rows are equal. So it means x1 minus x2 must be a factor. So all those things on the right are factors, right? But the thing is, so that you know, and if you look carefully, if you look at the degree is right. But the thing is, it's up to a sign. And the problem is, what is the sign? And you just have to compute one term of the determinant to get the sign right. But that's a highbrow way of doing it. But it needs a little bit about polynomials and n variables. This is a very nice way of doing it as well. So this is where does a van der Monde come in? For example, we'll see a use for it in a moment. So, for example, the van der Monde determinant appears in interpolation problems. So you want to interpolate a polynomial passing through a certain number of points. E.g., for example, find the curve, say y equals a naught plus a1x plus a2x squared. A1x plus a2x squared plus say a3x cubed, passing through the points in the plane, say x1, y1, x2, y2, x3, y3, x4, y4. Like for a quadratic, you need, for a linear, you need 2 points for a line. For a fast conic, you need 3. For a cubic, you're going to need 4 points. We'll see in a moment. Now, so what is the problem? So if you see, basically what you have is you have a naught x1, a naught plus a, plus a. So let's just see what does it mean to pass through those points. It means that you have a naught plus a1 x1 plus a2 x1 squared plus a3 x1 cubed equals y1. A naught plus a1 x2 plus a2 x2 squared plus a3 x2 cubed equals y2. A naught plus a1 x3 plus a3 x3 squared plus plus a3 x3 squared equals y3, and then you have a naught plus a1 x4 plus a2 x4 squared plus a3 x4 cubed. Equals y4. Now, this system has a unique solution. These are distinct points. Okay, these, through the points in here, x1, where you have x1, of course, I want x1, x2, x3, x4 have to be distinct. In other words, I have points here. So I have points in the plane. I have 4 points in the plane. And I want to pass a cubic through those 4 points. And so why can I do it? Because in this case here, the coefficient matrix, well, the coefficient matrix is a van der Monde matrix, or the determinant of the coefficient matrix is a van der Monde determinant. Because if you look at the coefficient matrix, so the determinant of the coefficient matrix is a van der Monde determinant, V4, with the column V4, x1, x2, x3, x4, right? Because if you look at the columns, the coefficients of a0, the variables are, of course, the a0, a1, a2, a3. You're trying to find the coefficients. They're the variables here. And then the first column's 1, 1, 1. And then x1, x2, x3, x4. and so it's the van der Molde. And we know that this is invertible under the hypothesis that was given. So this is not equal to zero. So therefore, there is a unique solution. So in other words, you can always pass through four distinct points where the abscissas are distinct. You can always pass as long as one is not on top of the other. So if you have points which are staggered, as long as one is not on top of the other, then you can pass a cubic through those four points, a unique cubic. There's a unique cubic passing through those points. And you can actually write it down. And the van der Molde tells you that because the points are distinct. Okay. One more thing then I want to just have to say. Well, it's not so nice because you have to, the way you do this, for example, use Cramer's rule to solve. Let me just talk about Cramer's rule. This will be the last thing I want to say here. Now, Cramer's rule is you have a system of equations you want to solve. So basically, you have a system of equations, AX equals B, where X is a column matrix, and B is also a column matrix, and A is an N by N matrix. A is an N by N matrix, and I'll write down the columns this way. Now, we know that to solve that system of equations, this is equivalent to writing x1a1 plus x2a2 plus xnan equals b. In other words, to solve that linear system of equations, it's the same thing as writing the column vector as the linear combinations of the columns of the coefficient matrix. That's the connection between matrix multiplication and linear combinations. Very important. Okay, now I'm going to do the same kind of trick that we did for the vector product. The determinant is kind of it provides us a gadget, just like the triple scalar product for doing this kind of thing. We'll essentially do the same thing. And this is, so what I'm going to do is the following. There's a unique solution. Here I'm going to say, so the claim is, this is Cramer's rule, is that if det A is not equal to zero, then there is a unique solution. Well, we know that because if det A is non-zero, then it's invertible. You have a unique solution. What it is. And the unique solution is xi. I'm going to tell you what the xi is. It's a ratio of two determinants. It's det A1. And then in the ith column here, I'm going to put a B and An. So I'm going to take the matrix A, and I'm going to replace the ith column of A by B. And then I'll have det A1, A-I, A-N. So now this is the ith column. Okay. Now why is that so? In other words, the solutions, the x's that you want, are ratios of determinants. And you get them from the determinant of the matrix, the ratio of two determinants. The denominator is the same as the determinant of the coefficient matrix. The numerator, you get it from the determinant in the denominator by replacing the ith column, AI, by the column of constants. That's the rule. It's very simple. And we've seen an example already. Okay, so how do I prove that? Let's give the proof. Proof is very, very simple. I just learned this proof actually from Professor Johnson the other day. So. You always learn stuff. I mean, after so many years I've taught this, 30, I didn't ever saw this proof. Really neat proof. Okay. The book gives you another proof. You can also prove it using the adjoint. If you look at the formula for the adjoint, A times the adjoint is determined on the identity, basically, or it'll give this out. But that's technically more complicated. This is less complicated, but much prettier. And here's the trick. So, let's take det A1 B. An. Let's take this determinant. And what I'm going to do, I'm going to look at that column. I'm going to subtract from that column a suitable linear combination of the other columns.
I'll show you what it is. Let me write it out. So it's debt, A1, nothing, and then B, I'm going to subtract from that the sum of the xj, aj, j not I, an. Now let's just look at that. All I've done is I'm taking a determinant, I'm taking the determinant of the matrix A, where the ith column has been replaced by the column of constants. I'm going to subtract from that column of constants x1 times a1, x2 times a2, etc., xn times an, xj times aj, where the j is not I. So in other words, I take all the other columns, say the column, jth column, multiply by xj and subtract that from. So I don't change the determinant, right? I'm just subtracting from a column a sum of other columns. So that doesn't change the determinant. Now, what is that number, b minus sum of the aj's? Remember, look at the above. B minus the sum of the xi, xj, aj is just going to be xi, ai. In other words, if I put on the right-hand side all the xj, aj's, where j is not I, what's left is going to be on the right-hand side is just xi, ai. So what this is going to be is determinant of a1, and then you're going to have xi, ai. This is absolutely beautiful. Xi, ai, an. No, the I is fixed. I'm working with the ith column. So yeah, I is fixed here. I is fixed. And so the index for the j's, it's xj, aj, and j is not I. Okay? So I is fixed. So it's the I'm working with the ith column. And I want to subtract from that column the sum of the multiples of the other columns, aj, where j is not I, and the multiple is xj. Okay, that doesn't change anything. Right? And you're done, right? Take out now the xi, because it multiplies that column. This is xi times the determinant of A. QED. One-line proof of Cramer's rule. It's absolutely cute. More than that. It's really nice. Okay. Cramer's rule. Everyone see that? Okay. Now, the book proves it, and it gives much... You can see when you have a problem where it's non-numerical. Usually there's so many different ways of doing it. Some are much easier than others. It's like just using the right lever, you get right to it. If you have the right idea, you can solve a problem sometimes much easier than if you do it just by brute force, by following your nose. But that, so, I mean, I've been 30 years, I didn't see it. This is nice. Now I can retire. the basis for this is I knew, but I just didn't know it could be done in such a nice way. Okay. So is there any other questions on determinants before I go on to eigenvectors and eigenvalues? Okay. Now let me see if I push the right button here. Okay, so now one of the main uses of determinants is the criteria for the invertibility of a square matrix, and that's useful in computing eigenvalues. Remember, lambda is an eigenvalue of a matrix A, if and only if there is a non-zero x vector x with ax equals lambda x. And that's the same thing as saying that lambda times the identity minus a x, the system of equations, equals zero, has a non-trivial solution. Right? Because I just take lambda times x, I can write it lambda times the identity times x, I bring that to the other side. Oh, okay. Let me do it the way the book. Sorry, this is correct, but I'm just so used to writing it this way. The book writes it the other way. It's correct up to a sign. Let's see. Lambda times the identity. No, that's right. Lambda. No, it's right. I'm doing the same thing again. I'm so stuck with that. It's a minus lambda times the identity times x. Why he does it this way is because
A minus lambda times the identity, there's only n non-zero. Only diagonal terms are non-zero. So when you subtract off, you don't have that many subtractions. The other way is lambda times the identity minus A is correct, but then you have to subtract off all the, and there's more possibility of making a sign error. So, but traditionally, it's the other way. But it's okay. It's the same opposite. And this is the same thing as saying that the determinant of A minus lambda times that coefficient matrix is zero. Because if it were not zero, then there would be a unique solution. It's a homogeneous system. Zero is a solution, so it must be only the trivial solution. Now, so this is a nice criteria. I forgot, again, force of habit. When you see A minus lambda, it's always going to be understood that it's multiplying the identity matrix, because you can't subtract a scalar from a matrix. But lambda times the identity behaves just like a scalar lambda. And it's a diagonal matrix with all lambdas, and they multiply and add just like, in fact, they're a copy of the real numbers sitting in there in the n by n matrices. You have a copy of the real numbers, just the diagonal matrices. Okay. And this is going to be a polynomial of degree n. Okay. It's a polynomial of degree n. It's called the characteristic polynomial. Characteristic of the matrix A. In French, I guess they call it the eigenvalues, actually valeur propre, I guess, eh? And those are also characteristic polynomial, what they call it in French, polynomial characteristic, I guess. But sometimes the eigenvalue comes latent roots or characteristic roots or valeur propre, or there's many different names. But anyway, we call them, so the roots of this polynomial are the eigenvalues of A. So now we have a way of computing the eigenvalues. So let's just give an example. Let me take a 3x3 matrix here. Okay. And let me compute the characteristic polynomial of this matrix. So here I have to take, if I take the determinant, well, let me just put, instead of determinant, let's compute this right up with bars. So here, if I take the determinant of A minus lambda times the identity, this is equal to 2 minus lambda, 1, 1, 1, 2 minus lambda, 1, 1, 1, 2 minus lambda. By the way, can anyone already tell me an eigenvalue of this matrix? I said something last time. Pardon? No. You're right. One will be, because if you subtract off one, you're going to get 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1. So that's a non-invertible matrix. Right? So can you give me another one? Okay, actually 4 is 1. It's the row sum. And the eigenvalue is, I said that, if you take 1, 1, multiplied by the matrix by 1, 1, 1, what happens is you just get the row sums. And it'll be 4 times 1. Anyway, we'll see. So we don't pretend we didn't know anything. We'll discover them. So here, now to expand this thing, you can use whatever way you want to do it. You can do the class expansion along the first column. Here I prefer, and actually here, whenever you have an occasion before you do a Laplace expansion form, or you can use that formula that we had. Here you have an occasion to introduce a zero in the last here by say subtracting the last from the last row the second row.
So let me do that, because anything you can do to simplify a matrix before you actually go about having to be forced to use some brute force technique, you should try to use eigens. So it's 2 minus lambda, 1, 1, and then 1, 2 minus lambda, 1, and then I'm going to subtract the, from the last row the second row, and so I'm going to have a 0, and I'm going to get what, lambda minus 1, and then I'm going to get 1 minus lambda. Now you see something nice happening here. When you do that, sometimes you can actually see a factor coming out. So in this case, you see the last row has lambda minus 1 as a factor. So that can come out now. So this, if you take out the lambda minus 1, what you're going to have left here is you're going to have a 2 minus lambda 1, 1, 1, 2 minus lambda 1, and then 0, 1 minus 1. Now I can actually, after I've done that, I can see that let me add to the second column the third column. So that's going to put in a zero there. So, or I could just add to the third column the second column. Let me do that. So I'll get lambda minus 1, and then 2 minus lambda, 1 and 0, and I'm going to add to the third column, the second column. So I'm going to get 1, 2 minus lambda, 1, and I'm going to get a 2, a 1 minus, a 3 minus lambda, and then 0. So now what I'm going to do is now I'm going to expand along the third column here.
Huh?
Yeah, I can add, I'll add the second column to the third. Okay? So I'm going to get a 2, 3 minus lambda, and 0. Whatever you can do for rows, you can do, remember the determinant of the matrix is the determinant of the transpose. So all, I mean, you can do row operations and column operations. For every row, you have a corresponding column operation. You just do it for columns instead of rows. It's the same theory. And that doesn't change the determinant, because the determinant of a matrix is the determinant of its transpose. So now you can see what you have. You can see what you have now is you'll have a lambda minus 1 times the determinant by expanding here. You're going to have 2 minus lambda. And there's going to be a sign, right? I can't forget the sign. There's going to be minus. It actually doesn't matter here because I'm looking for the roots of the polynomial. And then 2 minus lambda, 2, 1, 3 minus lambda. And so here I'm going to have minus lambda minus 1, and then I'm going to have, well, let me multiply that out. I'm going to have 2 minus lambda times 3 minus lambda, which is lambda squared minus 5 lambda plus 6, and then minus 2. So what this is lambda squared minus 5 lambda plus 4, which works out to lambda minus 1 times lambda minus 1 lambda minus 4. Okay. And so it's lambda minus 1 squared lambda minus 4. Now, this is actually the hard part. So, for example, if you had expanded in another way in the brute force way and got a cubic, if you didn't have a clue what the eigenvalues were, you have to factor a cubic. Now, there's no formula for the roots of a cubic. That's the big problem in eigenvalues. Actually, finding the roots of the characteristic polynomial is probably one of the most difficult things. So, usually, to make things workable, we try to find at least, give you a hint to find out, give you at least a way of finding one root. There are strategies for finding integer roots of polynomials. I'll next talk about later, but in the problems I'm going to be giving you, the characteristic, to make the examples work out nice, the eigenvalues will be integers. But in real life, the eigenvalues can be anything, complex numbers, any real number, and it's not very pleasant sometimes. Yeah.
I just did a follow-up.
I'm expanding along the last row, using Laplace expansion formula along the last row. And I do that, I cross out the last row because I have zeros on the other two sides. So the only thing left is 1 times, well, the cofactor of 1 is minus, and then the determinant obtained by crossing out that column and that row, the second column and third row, is 2 minus lambda, 1, 2, and 3 minus lambda. Okay, that's so I'm just expanding along the last row to get the determinant. Now you see that the eigenvalue is repeated. It has what we call a multiplicity. So 2 is what we call the algebraic multiplicity of that root.
So you have a repeated eigenvalue, if you like. And that causes problems, as we'll see. Okay, now let's compute the eigenspaces. So therefore, 1 and 4 are eigenvalues. And 1 has algebraic multiplicity. The algebraic multiplicity is the root of the multiplicity of the root in the characteristic polynomial. It has algebraic multiplicity 2, and 4 has algebraic multiplicity 1. Okay, let's compute the basis for each eigenspace. So what is the eigenspace for the eigenvalue 1? So E1 equals eigenspace for eigenvalue 1. That's equal to what? Well, that's a solution space of that system of equations. Remember, my system of equations was A minus lambda x times A minus lambda times x equals 0. So I am looking for a system of equations where the coefficient matrix is A minus lambda times the identity, where lambda is 1. So it's A minus lambda. And I'm looking at for the solution of the homogeneous system of equations with that coefficient matrix. And that's just the null space of that matrix. So this is what we call, this is the null space. Let's call it just null for short. This is the null space of the matrix 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1. Right, because that's just, this is A minus the identity. Because A minus lambda, the identity is coefficient matrix, I replace lambda by 1, so I just get A minus 1 or A minus the identity. I'm looking for the null space of that matrix. That's a solution. Now I really have only one equation, and the equation is x plus y plus z equals 0. So I have to find the solution space of that single equation, and it's very easy. What is the rank of that matrix? 1. Nullity is 2. So I have a basis of 2 elements. If you give me 2 independent solutions, I can write that's the solution set. So I don't have to use Gaussian elimination here. I don't even have to. It's very easy. So this is going to be the span of what? Give me 2 solutions, quick. Any 2 independent solutions. Well, for example, you solve x1 equals minus y minus z, and you set y equals 1, z equals 0, etc. Anyway, you can write them, say, 1, 1, or minus 1, 0 would be 1, and 1, 0, minus 1 would be another. Right? Because they are, the sum of the things add up to, and they're independent because clearly one is not a proportional to the other. So that's so these are eigenvectors, so that's a basis of, so the eigenspace, the vectors in there, the non-zero vectors, are the eigenvectors for the eigenvalue 1. So this is a basis of eigenvectors for the eigenvalue 1. So what about E4? That's the eigenspace for the eigenvalue 1. And that's going to be the null space of what matrix? It's going to be A minus 4 times the identity. And that you can write down. It's going to be minus 2, 1, 1. 1 minus 2, 1. And then 1, 1 minus 2. What is the rank of that matrix? Is it 3? No, it can't be 3 because it's not invertible. So it has to be 1 or 2. Is it 1? Can't be 1 because look, you have two rows there. One is not a multiple of the other. First two rows are not proportional. So the rank is 2. Nullity is 1. So I know that I'm going to have any non-zero solution of that is going to be a basis for the eigenspace. Can you give me a non-zero solution? You could do it by Gaussian elimination. Like sometimes, if you can avoid doing that, it saves time. So this is where your brain is going to save some work. On an exam, it's really useful to be able to use the theory. You know ahead how many vectors you're looking for. If I can produce the vectors simply without having to go through the whole procedure, so I know that if I take 22 linear independent vectors in the two-dimensional space, they're going to span. So here, I have a one-dimensional space. Can you give me a solution here? No. 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 Yeah, just 1, 1, 1, right? Because if you the row, if you took with the row sums, if you add 1, 1, 1, it's all 0. You add up the rows, because if you multiply by 1, 1, 1, so x equals y equals 1, you get 0. So this is the span of 1, 1, 1. Now, I claim that these three vectors are linearly independent. And can anyone tell me why? 1 minus 1, 0. 1, 0 minus 1. 1, 1, 1 are linearly independent. And therefore, a basis for R3. Why are they linearly independent? Well, I know the first two are. Yeah, now, to show that they're linearly independent, I just have to show the third is not a linear combination of the first two. Why could that not happen? Why couldn't the third be a linear combination of the first two? Without actually going and writing it down. This is where you don't want to. Why can it happen? Well, 1, 1, 1 is an eigenvector with eigenvalue 1. So if I multiply 1, 1, 1 by A, I get 4 times 1, 1, 1. But if it were a linear combination of the first two, what would it be? So if it were a linear combination, it would be an eigenvector with eigenvalue. With eigenvalue 1, so it can't happen. You can't have an eigenvector, a vector with an eigenvalue, which is an eigenvector with one eigenvalue, and also an eigenvector with another eigenvalue. So in other words, it knows where it sits. If you have a vector with eigenvalue 4, it can't be an eigenvector with eigenvalue 1, because they just doesn't write, because A times 1 is going to be 4 times that, and the other one, A times, is going to be the vector. And so the vector is not equal to 4 times itself. So they're linearly independent. And this actually we'll see a little bit later, hopefully, we'll be able to show that eigenvectors corresponding distinct eigenvalues are always linearly independent. Okay. Well, actually, we use the van der Mol determinant to prove that. Okay, let's see what we can actually do with this. Remember, we had in our 2x2 case where we had a basis of eigenvectors for a matrix A. We could actually use it to compute the powers of the matrix A. So let's just use this to show you how we can actually compute the powers of the matrix A. So let's do that. So we want to compute the powers of A. We want a formula for A to the N. Okay. Now, you remember here the strategy is, I have the columns. Let me call the columns of, let's call the columns here something. Let's call this P1. Let's call this P2. And let's call this P3. These column vectors, P1, P2, P3, are a basis for R3, but they have a very nice property that when I multiply A times any one of them, I just get a multiple of that vector. AP1 is P1. AP2 is P2. AP3 is 4P3. Okay. So they have a very nice property in terms, so you can see them much better, the effect of A as a linear transformation on the plane by looking at it with respect to these vectors. So in other words, if you use, instead of the standard basis, the basis consisting of the eigenvectors, then you can compute the effect of the matrix much easier, like we did in the previous example. This is what we're going to do. Whoops. What happened? I pressed the wrong... Okay. Okay. So compute A to the N. Now, what do we have? So if I take... So let's... X, again, look at our column vector, x1, x2, x3, belong to Rn, R3. Now I'm going to write x, I can always write x as a linear combination of the basis vectors p1, p2, p3. This is the first step. I can do that because for any vector x you give me, I can find a vector y1, y2, y3, such as this is true. because they're basis. In fact, you can write this in a better way. This is actually equal to, if you like, P y, where y is y1, y2, y3, and P is the matrix whose columns are P1, P2, P3. So in other words, I can actually find y. Therefore, y is P inverse x. So in other words, if I want to find the y's, you have to solve a system of equations with coefficient matrix P. So for example, if I wanted to write a find for 1, 0, I'd have to take 1, 0 and write it as a linear combination of the columns of P. And so I would solve this equation for x equals to 1, 0. And then that would P, so the first column of P inverse would be the y1, y2, y3 for that particular. So we have to compute in a minute. We're going to have to compute P inverse to be able to do this. So what is P inverse? Let's compute P inverse. Before I do that, let's just say why I'm going to do this. You see, the point is here is that if you take AX, AX is going to be equal to Y1 P1 plus Y2 P2 plus 4Y3 P3, right? Because when I apply AX, I get Y1 A1 AP1, Y2 AP2 plus Y3 AP3, but AP3 is 4P3. And similarly, I can get A to the NX is Y1 P1, Y2 P2, plus 4 to the N, Y3 P3. Just repeat that. Just keep going. Every time I multiply by A, it doesn't change Y1 P1, Y2 P2, but 4y3 ap3 would be 4 squared. So every time I hit a, multiply p3 on the left with a, I have to get out a 4, 4p3. So if I keep doing that n times, I'm going to get this. So I know the effect of a to the n on x, for any x. Now all I have to do is find x, I can just, to get the columns of a, I just have to solve it for x equals 1, 1, 0, 0, 0, 1, 0, and 0, 0, 1. That will give me the columns of A. But there's another way of doing it. You can actually, which you can see this way. If you look at AX, AX, you can write it this way. You can write this as, so this is you multiplying, so this is a linear combination. This is actually P times a diagonal matrix D. Or is it the other way around? So this is PD, where D is this diagonal matrix, 1, 0, 0, 0, 1, 0, 0, 0, 4. Okay. Because you can see that, because P times D, if you look at the first column of P, well, if you look at the, how am I going to say this? Let me get this right. I want to write this in matrix form. So this is going to be what? Let's see. Right. So here I'm taking the coefficients of the columns of P, with the coefficients being y1, y2, y3. So basically, what this is P times a matrix with whose coefficients are y1, y2, 4 times y3. Okay. And now I can write this as P times D Why? Okay, here it is. Because if you take dy, d is a diagonal matrix, so dy is going to be exactly y1, y2, 4, y3. So if you multiply a diagonal entry by y1, y2, y3, this is what you get. Okay. Now y, remember, y is equal to px. So this is equal to p d okay, this is P inverse X. So Y, remember, is P inverse X. Now, this is true for all X. So this implies that A is equal to P D P inverse. Okay. Because that's true for all X. In particular, it's true for X being 1, 0, 0, 0, 1, 0, 0, 0, 1. So this is saying that the columns of the matrix on the left-hand side are the same as the columns of the matrix on the right-hand side. So the matrices are the same. Okay. So in other words, there's a very simple relationship between the matrix A and the matrix D. In other words, this is what we call sometimes a similarity. This is what we call a similarity. A can be written as a product of three matrices, one an invertible matrix, another a diagonal matrix, and the other the inverse of the first matrix. And so in other words, two matrices which are related in this way are called similar. I'll make this definition in a minute. So, and similarly, you have A to the N is equal to P D to the N P inverse. And you can see that the same way by from the above, the equations for AX and A to the NX are the same. Or you can do it just directly by just multiplying A. Remember, we did it before. If you have A equals P D P inverse, and then times P D P inverse, the P and the P inverses are going to cancel in the middle. And you're just going to get d to the n every time. So you can see either see it from what we did before, or it actually follows from here. So in other words, we have a nice simple formula for computing any power of A as we reduce it to the computing of two matrix products. Well, in d to the n we can compute very easily because it's a diagonal matrix. So all the difficulty in the computing. So let's actually do and see what the result is going to be. So now let's make a definition here. Matrices A and B, let's make just before I finish the computation. So A and B are called similar matrices. I can't use the B. It's not the same matrix. I have B above. AC are called similar matrices if, say, C equals P A P inverse for some invertible matrix P. And we see here that we've seen that A is similar to a diagonalizable. So A above, A similar to a diagonal matrix. So we call if, we say A is diagonalizable. And the problem of diagonalizing a matrix is finding a basis of eigenvectors. That's the problem. A matrix is diagonalizable if and only if you can find a basis of, so an n by n matrix is diagonalizable if and only if there is a basis for Rn consisting of eigenvectors of A. Let me just finish the computation. I'll come back to that next time, because one way is rather clear that. One way is rather clear that if you have a basis of eigenvectors, then you have vectors p1, p2, pn with api is lambda ipi, and you do the same kind of trick and you get a similar matrix. On the other hand, you can go backwards as well. If you have an n by n matrix which is diagonalizable,
you make a matrix P, and that's the similarity. Then the D will be the diagonal matrix consisting of the eigenvalues, and the P will be the columns formed by the eigenvectors, matrix formed by whose columns are the eigenvectors. And then you'll have that same relation. A will be P, P inverse. Okay, let's just compute P very quickly. Now let's compute A to the n. We have a couple minutes. Let's just compute A to the n. So I have to compute P inverse. Well, what is P? Let me write down P was. P is 0, 1, minus 1, 0, 1, 0, minus 1, and 1, 1, 1. I want to write down quickly P inverse. Well, what's a quick way of writing? Well, can you tell me what the determinant never mind the determinant. Let's use the formula for the adjoint. Let's compute the adjoint of the matrix. Well, here actually I can compute the determinant rather quickly. Because if you just look very quickly, if I add to the second row here 1 1 1 the first row, I get 0 1 so the determinant of P is going to be, I know it's non-zero, so I'm going to add this, is going to be 0 1 2, and then I'm going to have 0 minus 1 1, and now if I add it's the determinant of this, and now this is going to be if I add the last row to the second row to the last, you're going to have the determinant 1, 1, 1, 0, 1, 2, 0, 1, 3. So it's 3. So the determinant of P is 3. So P is going to be 1/3 times the adjoint. Okay. So what is the adjoint? So I'm going to compute the adjoint of the matrix. Okay. Remember the formula for the inverse? Is 1 over the determinant times the adjoint matrix. So let's compute the adjoint matrix. Now the first column, the entries in the first column of the adjoint, I have to look at the cofactors of the first row. So let's look at the cofactors of the first row of my matrix. What's the cofactor of the first entry? Well, it'll be that determinant, 0, 1, minus 1, 0. What's that determinant? It's 1, right? It's 1. So if you take, and I'm going to compute the cofactors of the first row, those are going to be the entries in the first column. So the cofactor of 1, cross out first row, first column, the matrix there is that little matrix which has determinant 1. So that's going to be a 1. So now let's get the cofactor of the entry in the second row, first row, second column. I cross out the first row, second column. I'm going to get minus 1 times minus 1, and then, which is minus 1 times 0, minus 0, which is minus 1, but then remember I have a sign, cofactor is, for the second, I have a minus, so I'm just going to get a 1, right? Now the cofactor of 1, the third element in the first row, is that determinant, which is 1 and 1. So I have 1, 1, 1. Okay, that's the first row of my inverse. Right? You could also do it by the thing using Gaussian elimination or Gaussian reduction. You write the matrix and then the identity, and you do the elementary operations. For 3x3, sometimes this is just as quick, maybe even quicker sometimes. So let's compute now the elements in the second column of the adjoint. So I have to look at the second row of my matrix, and I look at the first entry. And so what do I get? I cross out that and that. I'll get 1 plus 1, which is 2. And the sign is minus. So it's minus 2. Okay? And then I have to, in the middle one, what is the middle one? The adjoint of the middle entry, it's going to be 1. And the entry, the last row, the adjoint, it's going to be, I cross out the second row, third column, I'm going to get, minus 1, so it's going to be 1. Right? And now I want to go to the last row. First, the cofactor of the first entry is 1. Last row, cofactor of that in the second column is cross out last row, second column. I get 1 minus minus 1, which is 2. And the sign is minus. And then the last entry, I'm going to get just 1. So that's P inverse. You can actually check it. Just multiply, just to check. You should always check this to work out. Because if you take P and multiply it, you're going to get
1, 1, 1 times the first column, you get 1 plus 1 plus 1, which is 3, and you're dividing out by 3. And you 1, 1, 1 times the other 2, you get 0. Okay, this works. I mean, you could do it another way, but this is fast. Okay, so therefore I have A to the N, if you like, A to the N is equal to P, 1, 1, 1, minus 1, 0, 1, and then 0, minus 1, 1, times my diagonal matrix, which is 1, 0, 0, 0, 1, 0, 0, 0, 4 to the N, times P inverse, which is, oh, I can take the third and put it in front, if you like, and not put the entries in, and then 1 minus 2, 1, 1, 1 minus 2, and 1, 1, 1. Okay. Actually, the first multiplication is actually easy to do. I mean, the product of the last two is easy to do. What is the, if you look at the, what is the first row? This is easy to do. And what is the first row of the product matrix, the last two? So the first row is the first row of A times this matrix, which is just the first row of the left. So it's 1 minus 2, 1. And the same thing now, 0, 1, 0 times that matrix A, that's the second row of the identity times the matrix is the second row of that matrix. You're using the fact that the ith row of AB is the ith row of A times B. And the ith row of the identity picks out the ith row. So this is going to be the second row of P inverse, which is 1, 1, minus 2. And then the last one is going to be, is just 4 to the n times that. So it's 4 to the n, 4 to the n, 4 to the n. Anyway, I'll let you write that out. So it's rather easy to see. You're going to get for the entry in the first row, what the entry is in the first entry in the first row, first column is going to be 2 plus 4 to the n all over 3. That'll be the entry in the first row. So that'll be the, so that's the way you've got a very nice way for computation for A to the n this way. Okay, so we'll stop.